Welcome to Everyday Enlightenment.
I'm your host, Patty Teal. We have a very special show today. Our guest is Dr. Eben Alexander, the best-selling author of Proof of Heaven, A Neurosurgeon's Journey in the Afterlife. He also wrote Map of Heaven, How Science, Religion, and Ordinary People Are Proving the Afterlife. Dr. Eben Alexander spent over 25 years as an academic neurosurgeon, including 15 years at the Brigham and Women's Hospital, the Children's Hospital, and Harvard Medical School. In 2008, his own remarkable near-death experience radically transformed his understanding of consciousness and the brain. Dr. Alexander co-founded the nonprofit Eterna to share this information, to further the research on science and spirituality and the nature of consciousness, and to encourage people to bring unconditional love into daily life. Eben will be coming to Sedona Mago Retreat October 7th through the 9th to put on a retreat called Beyond Illusion, Reality on Both Sides of the Veil, and will be joined by Karen Newell, co-founder of Sacred Acoustics, and Dr. Gary Schwartz, a renowned professor who will share recent research regarding communication with the other side. Welcome, Eben.
Well, it's great to be here. Thanks so much for having me.
I imagine this was quite life-changing for you.
Well, it did. Been quite a journey of discovery, and I'd say I'm still on a relatively steep part of the learning curve here, trying to assimilate it all and understand what it means. It's a beautiful journey all around.
I'm not sure if you're aware of this, Eben, but Sedona Mago Retreat, where you will be in October, is part of the Tao Fellowship. So if you don't mind, I thought I'd read just a little passage of your book. It says, Lao Tzu, the founder of Chinese religion of Taoism, said the Tao is like a great womb that produces everything, yet contains nothing. The Buddha described true reality as emptiness, an emptiness that is at the same time not empty at all, but full beyond all comprehension. These men were describing the higher regions of the heavens, hence the level of paradox in their utterances is at its highest, for the higher we go, the more paradoxical things become. I thought that was so interesting because it is hard to put some of these things into words. You're very eloquent and are doing a very good job. But
well, thank you. It is very difficult to put into words. And I'd say that, in fact, that observation about Taoism and about the universe and about our kind of attempts to look at it is very telling because, in fact, I see one of the primary problems in our conventional science, which in a generic term is best labeled reductive materialism, that is that the only thing that exists is the material, and the way to understand it is to break it down into the smallest possible parts and then understand the laws that govern those particles and parts and how they interact. From my point of view, since coma, I see that is fraught with error. That reductive materialism is guaranteed to lead to confusion and distortion about understanding the universe. And that's because of those false boundaries of self. The more we try to falsely separate parts of this universe out to understand them, the more we are introducing distortion and confusion. Now, at one level, at our kind of linguistic level, sometimes expanding that field of view to fully incorporate great swathes of time and space and a deeper understanding of the nature of reality can seem somewhat paradoxical. And yet what I believe is that the best way to look at any of this is to take the broadest view possible. And the more we can take it all in terms of trying to explain it, the more it seems to kind of come together in a sensible fashion. And in that way, I would say that anything that appears as confusing and distortional is usually a result of that kind of false separation. We sometimes think that, you know, the human bandwidth, our capacity of understanding is very limited, and therefore we narrow the bandwidth in hopes of understanding it better. But in fact, you must realize that we throw out information when we do that. And that's why I believe that a much better way of coming to understand the working of this universe is through meditation, through kind of a top-down view, where we start to expand our overall conscious awareness. And once you realize consciousness is not created by the brain, but is allowed in through a veiling filter in a very limited fashion, you can start to see how deep meditation going into consciousness, when it involves going beyond the veil and encountering that universal infinite consciousness that is the basis of all of the conscious awareness of the universe, that's where we can actually start to come to a deeper understanding of it. And that's why I often recommend to people that the best way to get to know this universe and our role in it is really to expand our connection to it and expand our awareness. And we can do that by going into deep meditation. And, of course, part of that is leaving behind that little voice in the head, the little voice that's also the voice of kind of logical and rational thought. But it's the voice of the ego, and the ego and its false sense of self as separate from the universe can be very misleading, and that's why reuniting with our higher soul in deep meditation, just as one does with a death experience or a near-death experience, allows us to have a far grander capability of understanding the nature of the universe and of our role in it.
Absolutely. You're listening to the Young at Heart radio show on KTMS 990. Today's guest is Eben Alexander, author of Proof of Heaven and the Map of Heaven. Do you have any idea, and this may be a tough question and you may not have the answer, why you had this experience?
Well, I believe that all of us are playing roles in kind of this evolution of consciousness, in this synthesis of science and spirituality, in this growth of understanding. In some sense, I would say that my role in this serves my kind of individual purposes in this growth, but also happens, as do all of our journeys, to have broader impact for all of us. I do remember also people would often ask me early on when I talked about my experience, they would say, well, this all-loving God gave you this deadly gram-negative bacterial meningitis, this lethal meningitis, to give you these lessons. I mean, this loving God did this to you? And I would say, no, this was something that was part of my soul journey. I would say the hardships and difficulties in our lives, I've come to see, we select our higher souls and soul groups before we ever come into this incarnation. So in so many ways, this was just kind of a necessary set of steps for me to take in this incarnation for part of my own personal journey of discovery. But just like all of our personal journeys contribute to the grander journey that we're all part of, so does my experience. I have met thousands of souls that are similarly involved in helping to wake this world up. Many of them may not even realize that's what they're here to do. Just like before my coma, I certainly had no clue that that was part of my bigger soul journey, but, you know, I was still having to awaken to it. So I think the best way to look at this is that all of consciousness is evolving. We are all participants in that process, and that even involves many of the naysayers and some of the self-proclaimed skeptics out there that I might argue, in my particular case, are really pseudo-skeptics, because to be a true skeptic, you must have an open mind. And in fact, as I often say in my talks, the greatest gift in this journey of discovery is a truly open-minded skepticism, and that is not really what some of those who attack me in my story, especially who simply dismiss it as hallucination or something that was made up or what have you, they are all still playing a role in this. We are all part of this awakening, and it takes all sides. Although I must say that closed-minded pseudo-skeptics really contribute very little to this. It's the open-minded skeptics, and I had to be my own worst critic and open-minded skeptic after my coma to try and make sense of any of this. Otherwise, I would have just dismissed it all. But my recovery was something that was just too profound to simply ignore. And I think that's one of the greatest lessons that will come to many from this, is that we do have the capacity to heal. And my own healing, as my doctors will tell you to this day, appears to be miraculous. There's no explanation within Western medicine to explain it. And yet I think there are lessons in there for all of us that can have great application in the process of healing. And we can come to see what Western medicine would label as miraculous healing in many more cases as we all come to a much richer and deeper spiritual healing. Because, in fact, I've come to see as a doctor, as a physician, that all of healing, whether you're talking about physical, mental, emotional, what have you, necessitates at the very core deep spiritual healing, and that is something that was part of my coming back to this world, was a very deep spiritual healing that I had to go through.
Gosh, thank you for sharing that. I'm going to share a little funny story with you. I have a girlfriend And we always write each other little cards. And when we're going through hard times, she says, put your hand down, because in her imagination, we're on the other side. Oh, I'll take on that challenge. Oh, I'll do that one.
I love it. That's great. That is so true. This is what we're here to do. I think it's another important lesson out of Proof of Heaven, is we need to see that the challenges and hurdles in life, and especially as a doctor, I would say that includes illness and injury, are gifts. They are the stepping stones that allow our souls to ascend. And it's by how we deal with those challenges, if we can manifest for ourselves and for all those around us the unconditional love, compassion, forgiveness, acceptance, and mercy that are the main challenges and lessons that we are to learn now at the current phase in humanity, it brings us tremendous capability of growth.
Yeah.
So view those hardships and illness and injury as beautiful gifts, because they are what enable us to grow. And I think the more we can come to realize this and remember that we are divine, eternal, spiritual beings, and bring that love for our divinity and for ourselves and for others into this world, the more we can participate in that grand healing process that unconditional love brings.
Oh, you're so articulate. Another very big-hearted friend of mine says, I didn't open up, I was cracked. So I think sometimes, as you said, the hardest experiences end up being expansive and helping you.
That is very true, and it's a beautiful gift to realize. And of course, most people have trouble realizing that in the moment. When you're challenged with, a terminal diagnosis or the loss of a child or some incredibly difficult hardship, it's very, very difficult in the midst of that angst to be able to see it as a gift or as a possible stepping stone in the ascendance of your soul and your soul's journey. But in fact, when we look back on those challenges, often it can become clearer to us that, in fact, they brought us great gifts that were not so apparent at the time.
Mm-hmm.
But if we were able to rise to that challenge and grow through it, especially in our manifestation of love and compassion and mercy and forgiveness, then we come to see it as indeed truly an engine of our ascendance and growth.
Well said. I think it was Deepak Chopra. I don't want to misquote him, but he believes that when we pass over to the other side, that we create our reality, and what we think we're going to see is what we're going to see. Would you agree with that, or do you have a whole different idea?
Well, I would say that in many ways, our kind of higher souls and soul groups and the divine have a little more wisdom in all that than we do as individuals here facing our incarnations on this side of the veil, where we intentionally are prevented from knowing all that we can know between lives and when reunited with our higher soul. So in that sense, I would say it's important to have an open mind, but remember that the universe is here to teach us what we need to know. And this is something that often comes up and when I'm in discussion, especially with some of those pseudo-skeptics out there who are just not believers by their nature, because it's important to point out to them that people often have a major course adjustment with a near-death experience. We don't just go in there seeing what we believe in and want to see in advance.
Mm-hmm.
And my own personal story is a good case in point, because as I discussed in Proof of Heaven, for 8 years before my coma, ever since February of 2000, when I reached out to my birth mother, and those who don't know my story need to know that I was adopted, and because my son at that time was doing a school project in family genealogy, I thought I had to reach out again to the children's home to try and reconnect with my birth mother. I had done that before, never with any success. So in February 2000, what happened was I reached back out to the children's home trying to find out if my birth mother was out there and wanted to communicate with me, and I found out from the children's home that my birth mother was out there, but it was not a good time to come back in her life. And to me, that was, I perceived that with a sense of strong rejection. And it ended up killing in me any hope in the power of prayer or in the existence of a loving personal God. That was in February 2000. So I spent the next 8 years of my life strongly agnostic, not believing in power of prayer and in God. And that is something that, of course, was completely reversed deep inside my coma. But look at it from the point of view of there I was, a human being with 8 years of staunch agnosticism, not believing in that God at all, and that's when I had this revelation in my near-death experience. And I also saw much in that experience that was not part of my prior belief system from a scientific neurosurgical standpoint. So these lessons can come to us in profound and unexpected ways, and it's what the universe has in mind to show us to help in our growth and understanding. So I may be misinterpreting your quote of Deepak Chopra there, but I would say that that we don't just get what we believe in and what we expect. Mm-hmm. It's important to be open-minded, because the universe can show us things that we never fully believed in before, give us the evidence, and it can often change us from our prior belief systems. Our language can heavily flavor what we bring back to this world and kind of personalize the telling of our stories. But remember that the universe can use those kind of examples and epiphanies and spiritually transformative experiences to help nudge us in the right direction. It's not just what you expect to see, but it does help to be very open-minded about this universe and what it has to offer.
Very well said. Could you talk a little bit about reincarnation and soul groups?
Well, yes. I think, to me, I often say that the only way to make sense of any of this is to step back and take a broad enough view. This is something we often encourage people to do in deep meditation, where you realize that little voice in the head is the voice mainly of ego, and that little voice is not your consciousness. Your consciousness is your awareness. It is what witnesses that voice, but it can also witness far grander sources of information. Now, one thing that to me was very clear from my deep coma journey, from my lessons in the core realm, had to do with reincarnation, and that eternity of soul very much implies that we come back again and again in this journey of souls to get it right, to ascend towards oneness with the divine, but not through one incarnation and then eternal heaven or hell, like I was taught in my Christian upbringing, but through something that's quite a bit different. Again, not expected based on my prior belief systems, but what the universe showed me was this very strong sense of how all consciousness is one. We're all part of one consciousness. It's not limited by time and space like our little view from the standpoint of a human being in normal waking consciousness. We have this kind of illusory sense of birth to death, nothing more. But that is not really the way it works. We're far grander than that. And that involves taking on this much broader mindset. And the broader mindset also involves seeing that my existence is not just in this one incarnation, but many incarnations interwoven in a beautiful tapestry with the many other souls in my soul group that are involved in this progressive ascendance towards oneness with the divine. Reincarnation is absolutely crucial to understanding any of this. It makes no sense if you are too myopic and limit this to just one little view, or birth to death, nothing more. So reincarnation was crucial. It was shown to me in that deep core journey, and yet it's taken me many years to try and assimilate that into my worldview, because so much of my writing about this and trying to share it with the world also involves trying to incorporate the lessons I was taught, the things that I witnessed, and the understanding that came to me in that near-death experience, but do it in a fashion that makes some kind of sense with my evolving worldview as a scientist, as, you know, as a human being with these experiences, but also one who lives here in the 21st century with my fellow beings, all of whom are trying to make sense of our existence. Reincarnation, to me, was really the best way to reconcile that infinitely loving, infinitely powerful deity, that God at the core, that source, that Om deity that I witnessed in the core, It was impossible to see that deity, omniscient, omnipotent, and all of that, to allow the suffering of innocents like children and animals in this world. To me, that was a vexing point that needed to be somehow reconciled, and it was easily reconciled by seeing that the reincarnation that I saw as part of the fabric of reality in my coma journey also brought much sense to interpreting this world, giving that suffering of innocence, and especially children and animals. That's what really forced me to acknowledge the power of reincarnation as an explanatory module. Now, another thing to point out about that is I didn't realize that there actually is quite a strong scientific basis and scientific literature on reincarnation. A lot of that comes from the University of Virginia, the work of Ian Stevenson, and lately of Jim Tucker. They have more than 2,500 cases of past life memories in children where the most ready explanation was reincarnation. Now, I knew nothing of that literature before my coma because, of course, I would have considered it absolute nonsense. I would have spent none of my time studying it because, as a conventional neuroscientist, I believe the brain creates consciousness. But of course, when you realize that that hopeless fallacy is absolutely false, that consciousness is fundamental in the universe and that the brain is a reducing valve that actually limits consciousness down to a trickle, it makes much more sense to study all that scientific literature on reincarnation. And when you do that, you start to realize, of course, this is the way that the world works. It's the only way to make sense of it. And there is a rich, evolving clinical background and literature on past life memories in past life regressions and between life regressions that I think are very important to literature in trying to understand any of this. And for any individual trying to make sense of their life, it certainly makes sense to follow the, you know, the writings and studies of Brian Weiss and others who've gotten into past life and between life regressions to realize that to try and to complete the picture, we need to pay attention to that much bigger picture, and that is that we've been here before and we'll be here again.
I could just talk to you forever, but unfortunately, our time is...
I enjoy talking about all of this, so...
Yeah, is winding down. Just another question. When you talk about reincarnation, I remember I read a book, and it was a fiction book, something similar to The Lives of Oversoul 7. So these people were living in different time periods, having all these different reincarnated lives, but it was done simultaneously, since we're learning that time is not linear. Do you have a feeling about that?
Yes, I think it's very important to point out something that was clear to me in my journey, and I explained this a little bit in Proof of Heaven and then expound on it a little bit in The Map of Heaven. But it has to do with the fact that time flow in this realm is very much illusory. It's part of the construct on this side of the veil. Even though there is a consensus reality that is unfolding, that is part of all of our shared soul journey, in fact, time flow in that realm is completely different and works much more in tune with the evolution of soul groups and the evolution of consciousness and kind of the ascendance of all of sentient life throughout the universe. I saw that whole thing as a collapse as I was ascending through these levels and went from the Earth where my view up into the brilliant ultra-real gateway valley and from there through the angelic choirs and hymns ascending through higher and higher levels all the way out to the core realm, the infinite oneness of eternity and infinity. And all through that, what I could see is the the apparent time flow down here in this four-dimensional space-time was very much a construct that helped to set the stage for various souls on this journey. And yet the much deeper aspect, what I call deep time, which is a temporal dimension that allows for the causal ordering events to enable the ascendance of our soul groups and soul journeys in this much grander version of time flow and causality, that is a very crucial concept to understand. Time flow in that realm is much richer and deeper and much more attuned with the actual ascendance of soul groups than what is apparent in this realm. The time flow in this realm is very much like the Hollywood facade for filming a Western, whereas the themes and the plots of the individual soul journeys are more what make up the deep time and the causality in that higher realm. And one place where this has practical importance is when you discuss reincarnation, because by definition, a soul does not reincarnate in any fashion that removes it from availability to other souls involved in its soul group. Say, for instance, that reincarnation would never occur before a soul that's part of the soul group makes that final transition over to be welcomed to that realm by that other soul that has not yet reincarnated too early, if you get what I mean.
It's important
to understand the higher causality involves all of the soul interrelationships and the deep time causality in that realm, and not any kind of sense of reincarnating too early from the viewpoint of Earth time.
I
don't know if that was a little bit obtuse, but just trying to show that causality in that higher realm completely trumps any kind of temporal causality in this realm.
Well, I'm sure my listeners, along with myself, have a million more questions we'd like to ask you. And I want to remind everyone that you'll be coming to Sedona Mago Retreat October 7th through the 9th to put on a retreat called Beyond Illusion, Reality on Both Sides of the Veil, and that you'll be joined with Karen Newell, co-founder of Sacred Acoustics, and Dr. Gary Schwartz, a renowned professor who will share recent research regarding communication with the other side. And I, for one, can't wait to meet you in person and to hear some more, because there is so much to talk to you about. And I just want to close with, I think that somehow this was part of the master plan to have someone as well-educated as you and a physician to have this experience so that you could share it with the rest of us. So thank you.
Well, you know, there are many experiencers around this world, and I've been privileged to meet thousands of them. And, you know, to me it doesn't matter if they're, you know, a PhD like Gary Schwartz, who are very evolved in addressing all this from an academic and scholarly standpoint, or if they're a dishwasher at Starbucks or homeless under a bridge, or I don't care. I mean, all souls are involved in this journey. Where I've been, it doesn't mean squat that I have an MD or spent all that time at Harvard Medical School, because this is a journey we all share.
Well, I totally understand.
And I love sharing it with all fellow humans who are interested in this lovely, absolutely astonishing universe that we are all part of.
Absolutely. But because you were renowned in your field, people listened.
I think this world needed that, but hopefully we're moving beyond that to a point where all individual souls honestly sharing their stories will always contribute to the growth of all of humanity.
I absolutely agree. Well, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day to talk to us. I so appreciate it, and again, I look forward to meeting you.
Well, thank you so much for having me, and I look forward to meeting you, too.
Okay.
Thanks so much.
Bye now.
Bye now.